I don't ever get to sing low. I like singing low. I don't ever get to.
Well, go ahead right now. What were you singing low? You, now that your voice is all
Let me see. What was I just singing?
Let's hear it.
Wade in the water.
Y'all's normal voices are low. So, I mean, I was singing, chestnuts roasting on an open fire. It felt good.
And you're doing it low.
Frost. Yeah.
Jack Frost.
That's pretty low.
Yeah.
I can sing lower than that. At your nose.
No.
I can't ever sing that.
No.
Nose, nose, nose.
I can't get down there. No. Y'all remember Byron Barr in our.
Yes.
Did you remember him?
Yeah, I remember.
This black guy in our music. In college, he could sing so low.
His voice was low too. He kind of talked like that a little bit. Yeah.
Man, that's crazy.
That's an F.
You know, there was a time where I.
D.
Are you sure that's a D?
D.
I can't sing no D.
You got a piano beside you. You can't.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's
it.
A D.
That's
yeah,
okay.
I can't
okay.
sing that.
D. Yeah.
I said, can you go lower than a D?
I might get a C.
C.
It's getting gross.
Can I go to a B?
B.
Can I go to an
no.
A?
No, you can't. No. C, you almost hit a C, but pretty much crap out of D. Pretty much a D.
I hit a B. I just did it.
It sounded
okay,
kind of weird.
Hold on.
That's a scene.
I was just trying to envision you in the choir trying to sing like that, and it sounds like a little frog.
You have to put the microphone in your mouth to hear it, though.
That's it.
It's the quietest it's, thing possible.
It's quiet, but I did it.
You did it.
That's one of my favorite episodes of Andy Griffith's show. Is Barney is a terrible singer, and Andy is everybody. And I think his name is not Ralph. What is the name of the choir director? All the characters in that show are so amazing. Great. The show, even though it's hard to say it's underrated. But people don't just understand the comedic genius of it and the acting skill and everything. And the episode is Barney can't sing and he gets the solo and then he's doing terrible. And the choir director doesn't want to tell him. And then he makes Andy and Andy goes, wait, hold on. This is what, and he gets another guy. He said, Barney, you just have to sing too loud. And Barney's no, too loud. Too
they
loud.
Told him that a special microphone or something.
Yeah, the microphone was way too sensitive, mm-hmm. and if he sang it all loud, it would go wee, your feedback and all this stuff. And but what was really funny is they had a guy behind the curtain actually singing it, but it was a bass. It was just not Barney. But Barney got so his chest started puffing out because he was singing like this and singing the solo, and it was so awesome. And it's like one of the most endearing things. It's just so the whole show is so good. Like it's my all time favorite show, but a minute ago we were talking about college, Byron Barr. There was a time, probably for 10 years after college, I would say a whole decade after college, where I still felt kind of attached to college. Like I wasn't that far away from it, even though I was, you know, probably almost 35. I was probably mid-30s. I still felt, maybe it's because of the band or whatever, but I felt really attached. Like I was still kind of a college person, and then that totally went away. And now it feels very bizarre to think about college, like as doing it. Like if I had to go on campus and go to class and hang out with people at parties and stuff like that, that would be this almost a bad thing now. It'd be terrible. I mean, even if everybody was my age, even if everybody was in their 40s. Now that would be an interesting idea. College for 40-year-olds. You know what I mean? Maybe I should look into that. I'm single. I could. What if I started a college for 40-year-olds where you go and you live in a dorm and everything, but everybody there, you know, because when you're in college, everybody's in 18 to 24 or something like that, right? So now, what if there was college for 44 to 50? Wouldn't that be cool? That might be a new business idea I should start.
It'd be,
Okay. What are you, the dean?
I guess that's like old school, the movie. Yeah. But I would be the dean. And then it's choose your own curriculum, choose your own adventure. You know what I mean? Like you say, you know what? I always wish I would have done that. Because when you're in your 40s, a lot of people are having midlife crisis. A lot of people, you know, you go, what do you wish you would have done? You're 45 years old right now. What you maybe you had a good job, maybe you had family, all this stuff, maybe you're divorced, all this stuff. And what do you wish you would have done? You know what I mean? Like if I could, I would go back. Here's two things that I would love to take classes for.
Marine biology for you, right?
Exactly that. No, quantum physics. No, counseling or, some kind of therapies, classes or something like that, or just straight up car mechanics. I think that would be just so awesome just to work on an engine every day in class. I think that would be so fun.
It's a dormitory, the whole hall of people having midlife crises in auto mechanic dorm.
You know how that'd be fucking way crazier than going to the Kappa Sig party when you're 20. Imagine all these fuckers, they're 40 something years old and they're just, their life hadn't turned out the way they had, or it was going fine, but they're like, what? Is this it? What's left? You know what I mean? And man, that would be fun. Imagine if you bought an old apartment building with 100 apartments in it, you know, kind of like a little bit of a high rise. And it has 10 floors or something like that. And then the bottom floor is just classrooms. And you go to it and there's like a garage. And then, you know, so there's 10 different things you can do, or you choose your own. Like I said, you go, I'm just going to study and you figure it out on, you know, but the main thing is just living together and hanging out and doing some crazy stuff in your 40s. That sounds
pretty
good.
I think it's
starting
to sound more and more like a halfway house.
It could be. Get off your drugs or something like that. Yeah. That could be cool.
Yeah. It's a turning point. You know, it's like you get a new start, you go with other people, put in your time, but you get, you know, you got support around you. So you turn over a new leaf.
Do you think there would be more or less sex at that age level than an actual college?
That's a good question. I've always wondered how much sex really was happening in college. Do you think it felt like everybody's doing it but me. But I don't know if that's actually true.
Probably not.
I don't know if anybody's doing it anymore. People say they do it, and I guess they are, but I don't even know. I don't really understand sex anymore.
There's not good stats on it that I know of. I'm sure there is and stuff, but I mean, it's always been unclear what was really going on, right?
You know what I mean? Like, people say shit. Maybe people say a lot of shit.
Yeah. Everybody says stuff.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know, and I guess you never will. They say people that talk about it aren't having it. But
it's kind of like in middle school when everybody says they do not masturbate, but they all do. It's kind of like later everybody says they are, but they are not.
Right.
Yeah. That's very possible.
Yeah.
I would say, because I would say in the 40s, people would just, they would just do it. It would just be like, there's no question. Do I do it or do I not? Or is this a budding relationship? Or it would just be like, well, we're attracted. Let's have sex or let's don't. It's just like, it would just be more mutual, like sexual relationships rather than, you know, kids doing what kids do.
I'm pretty sure we're fully out of touch, though, also.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, we don't know anything.
I'm sure we do not know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know what? I'm going to, this is a good moment to say, I might talk to Stormy on my podcast, Sex 101, about this. We're recording another episode. We got some killer listener questions. I mean, really good. Like, people are being open and honest and vulnerable. Some of the questions, I mean, we got some really good questions. And so I'm kind of excited about it. So,
and the question is, how much sex are the kids really having these days?
There's got to be stats on that. But the stats come from the kids who tell the surveys the stats.
Right. It's a self-reporting situation.
That's
how it's conducted. It's
got to be skewed.
Yeah, it's totally skewed.
It has to be. Just the same way as everybody in the South said they were Christian.
Right.
On whatever survey, they were Christian. They just knew of a church.
The right. best way to do they it would Muslim. Be to use just actual privacy invasion on iPhones and listen to the sounds and have AI analyze the sounds with the microphones in the room to hear the squishing noises and let the computer analyze those. Yeah. And they could tell the difference in, you know, whether it was, if there was two people
real
involved.
Or fake squish.
Yeah, like you can hear if there's two people in the room, the breathe, you know, you can analyze the audio that is being stolen. You know, we assume that the cameras on your laptops and your audio on your devices, there's always devices nearby that could be monitoring such things. That would be the real stats yeah. we need. We would need to have, like, you know, maybe China has that. Maybe the Chinese government is monitoring their peoples. That would be good data. But self-reporting data, not so much.
I can't imagine before AI took over. What if that was somebody's job? So your job is to put on headphones and determine if somebody's jacking off with lotion.
That's what spies had to do, right? Like a spy, and there's a person in Russia listening to somebody.
Yeah,
you know,
a van with a satellite on top of it. Yeah,
and that really did happen, and they're listening to political officials sleeping with a prostitute or something. I have the files.
Oh man!
I mean, the self-reporting is terrible because, like, also, like, you can't trust humans at all. Like, eyewitness reports are the worst, right? Like, the people say, "I witnessed this," and they're like, "Way off."
Bad.
People remember things terribly bad. I mean, you can be manipulated so badly, like whether it be, you know, you can put somebody can put a thought in your head and you thought it.
Happens all the time. You know what I mean? It happens to me all the time. It happens to me all the time. I mean, it happened to me last week. I was trying to remember what it was, but it happens all the time. Oh, it was just something at the co-op preschool. They were looking for these files and that they were looking for that would have been in my jurisdiction at some point.
Yeah,
and I said, well, no, I mean, I had those and I put them here and I did that, and then somebody asked like two more follow up questions, and said, well, it was a binder and it had this on it and that, and I was like, fuck, I remember seeing those now. I lost them, and I was confessing to having lost, and I went and looked at storage, I went everywhere, and I went and apologized to the person and everything. I was like, I know I screwed it up, but I always screw up stuff like this, and I shouldn't have had them in the first place. And then I found out that I didn't have them, but I'd already started remembering that I had them and lost them. I was like, I bet I threw them out when I was moving, you know, just immediately.
You know me.
And then they started describing what they looked like. I was like, yeah, you know.
I saw that.
I've definitely seen a blue binder.
It was white. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I screwed that up.
Oh,
I mean,
man,
that definitely happens
so
all the time. And I was thinking, too, another thing is about, like, medical stuff. So, like, Toby was talking about his physical, and they asked him if he smoked or drank or something. And, of course, he says no. You know, people say no. If a doctor asks you, do you do something unhealthy? So many people lie and say, no, I don't do that.
They usually do the math, but that stuff makes me so mad because they'll say, like, well, how many drinks do you drink? And then you say an answer, and then they double your answer to themselves because they know you're cutting it in half.
Right.
That's just another
self-report skew.
But you can't tell the truth because they don't believe you and they double your answer in their own minds anyway. Right. Just like when people say, what time are we supposed to leave? You go, well, you better be in the lobby at 5:45. Because they know you're going to be 15 minutes late, but it's 6. So then you get into that game where nobody's telling the truth about anything.
So basically, all human stats are not accurate.
I mean, self-reporting. You're getting the ideas and trends. And if you know the,
I mean,
it's
a guess. It's a guess.
It's better than nothing. I mean, eyewitness reports have been, the court cases have all been settled by those, but... You know,
but that's why you can't believe like alien sightings either, though. You know what I mean?
That's
true. Everybody, I mean, I believe at this point in my life, people have seen a real alien ship or something. They've seen some kind of, maybe I shouldn't say ship. They've seen some kind of anomaly thing that wasn't from this earth or that anybody, I believe that. Or it's a time traveler or something. I don't know.
Dimensional.
Yeah. Right. Maybe something like that. I believe that happened, but I would still say majority probably just not.
Yeah. You know but it would only take one real. Like if there was 1 million fake sightings and one real sighting, that's a quite significant nonetheless.
Yeah.
On something like aliens.
Alien.
Alien.
I want to get to, so we hadn't done them in a while. I have a bunch of Ask and You Shall Receive questions.
Let's get to them. Otherwise, you never do if you get to roll.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we can go ahead and roll with some if y'all want. We also need to, is Katie sending our call to action sheet for us, folks? Yes.
She will before the show's over.
I hope that's the case. If she doesn't, I have to go back to an old one and Katie will be fired immediately.
She's slipping.
I mean, I don't know what she's doing. When she's up in there in Seattle with you guys.
No, she's
not. She's
off gallivanting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really like that you got her working for another band. There is one band.
There's one band.
Now, that's not a good attitude.
For her to have, you're right. For her, she knows a bad attitude to work with another band.
We're Matt's like third, like we're the lowest on the totem pole of the bands that he works for.
Yeah. Matt has worked with Under Oath and King's Kaleidoscope. And Emery.
Yeah.
We're down there somewhere.
Damn it. I work with Motley Crue.
Yeah, Dave works with everybody in the music business.
Yeah, Dave.
Everybody. True. Dave's got clients.
Literally.
On top of clients.
I took
Motley Crue, Alicia Keys. He's done meetings with Alicia Keys directly.
I know.
That's so funny.
I took the kids to the mall this weekend. I was like, you know what? Because I was like, there ain't much to do. And I was like, I'll just go to the mall. They might kind of think that's fun, actually. You know, and there's a decent mall in Champaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's as good as the malls is, you know, Greenville Mall or Haywood
though. Haywood
was legit. I guess it still is okay. But this mall's fine. And we were walking around and I saw Hot Topic. And I was like, oh, let's go in here. This will be, you know. And the Hot Topic store is very small now. It felt like it was about half as big as the one that I went to. And I was walking around and everything is made to look, you know, my kids go, oh, this is an emo store. This is an emo store. And I was like, yeah, that's right.
That's crazy.
And I told them, I was like, you know, it used to be really important if our music was one of the six CDs that got, and you had put on headphones and you went and listened at Hot Topic. And that really did make you, that really did help. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, it's so funny. And the two girls working there not dressed up. That's probably the regular, but they looked emo and all this stuff. And then I caught a glimpse of something to my right. And it was an old man that was in there, but it was a mirror. And the old man was me. And I was wearing not emo clothes, but dad clothes. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, I look like a nice looking older man who's a dad. And I was like, whoa, I mean, that's crazy. Like, I used to walk in the store and maybe look a little cooler, at least younger or look maybe a hair more emo or something. But now that I look like a dad, and I actually wrote music that helped that store be important. Isn't that weird? But I look like, you know, not cool. Not cool at all. It was so weird. And I was like, hey, come on, let's get out of here. I had to leave. I made the kids leave because I was like, this is weird. Like, and then I thought, what, am I supposed to look emo? If I was dressing emo, I'd probably look dumber. Right? I'd look worse. If I caught myself with a white rhinestone belt and and, you know, and a super tight shirt and girl jeans on, I'd be like, oh, no.
Oh, if you saw a
real
mid-40s guy like that, too, you know what you think of him?
So it got me thinking, I don't know exactly how do I dress kind of cool now, but not dumb. I'm at a weird age where, like, I'm not going to dress like I'm in my 20s. And, you know, I can't look like, you know, I don't know what band. What's the band that we went on tour with? And then they blew up. That's like every band. But and then the drummer got
Pierce
in trouble. Pierce the Veil. I was like, I can't look like I'm in Pierce the Veil right now, or I'd look really dumb and bad. But I don't really want to look like my dad. Like in the mirror, I think I'd look like to my dad, who dresses kind of nice and he's out at the mall. You know, so I don't know what to actually wear anymore.
Well, look at the cool. other generations ahead. Like, what is Mark McGrath wearing these days?
Oh, that's probably terrible. Whatever he's wearing is probably awful.
He's probably, yeah. I mean,
like, who's somebody? Yeah. Is there somebody that dresses?
Maybe an actor would be close. Like, yeah. somebody like a Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
He's around 40.
Nah, that's not a good one because his whole cutesy. Thing
he's a little
is,
too cool.
Yeah. His whole thing is being like a broad appeal in a mass way. Whereas, you know, our music has a look to it. Like it does right. A thing like Steven Tyler. What's he supposed to do? Yeah. He has to still look like Aerosmith.
He has to be. Steve
he has down. To still yeah. be that even if he's old. So, you know, you have to right. tie it into your genre. Like your image is still related to something. The best yeah. example I can think. And then a lot of times when that goes out of style is pretty goofy, though. New metal bands, for instance, or radio rock bands right. are dumb. That or the people that wear the Afflicted shirts. That was the last generation. You don't want to fall into that. Like right. when right. it goes out or it's stupid looking and you're still hanging on to it. But Trent Reznor, I think, has done it right. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, he just wears like a black t-shirt, I think.
Yeah, he's
right.
just black.
Well, so do you. It's fine. But you just have big yeah. muscles and short yeah. hair and be really... You know, good.
Yeah, I'm working on my muscles. You know who yeah, I think that's all you can do. Has it that I wish I could pull off is Rivers Cuomo. I saw him on an interview.
Yeah, he's
and
he's
I was
able
like,
to
oh man, yeah. he has those glasses yeah. and he has a nerd look, and it just totally works. And he still looks the same. Like he really does just look like
he's
that.
Not trying to look youthful in any way,
right? But he has a cool look. Nerd.
Yeah.
It's a little bit nerd. It's on the nerdy side. So,
but it is like he can't really deviate from it though, right? So it is a character.
Yeah, he can't. But also, it's kind of. I was thinking how nice it has to be to never have to worry about it. He knows exactly. You know, he might wear a cardigan vest, sweater, or something, or you know, some glasses, and his hair is going to always. You know, he probably won't grow his hair out long, and he can always look kind of like the weak punk rocker, the strong. You know, with the distortion guitar stuff. I mean, I guess that's what it is. Anyway.
It's funny. Well, I was going to say real quick. Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day because one of Rivers' buddies, his older brother, who's only a couple years older, he's probably 10. He asked on the bus the other day, he asked Carolina if he could have my autograph.
A 10-year-old?
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that funny? But I think it was because his family came to our show one time at a thing, and I
saw you on YouTube
about it. Yeah, and then Carolina was kind of embarrassed. But then I was thinking, like, it's so funny because I could walk around Monticello or Champaign or whatever in just a normal everyday thing, and nobody would ever guess
right.
that I was the lead singer of an emo band.
Right.
Like I would never be mistaken for one. Like Toby was saying. No. Not that I look terrible right. or whatever. Right. It's just that's not me.
Yeah, but you are in a category, a more specific subcategory known as elder emo. That would be a little bit
elder
more.
Emo.
If they were aware that's of the true. Category, they might better figure it. They might better guess it right. on a menu of possible multiple choice.
That's
and
true.
There was an elder emo category, maybe they could get it.
That's true. I might get lumped in elder emo.
Yeah, but
all
I don't
right,
even
what
know
you got, Toby?
The people. Yeah, I don't even know if people knows what that means. Elder
no, they
emo.
Don't.
But yeah,
they don't.
Yeah, I got to get a look. I know that. I need a look that I can just go to, and I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't
well,
really
a
like
new look
looking
either
my,
way. Given your
might as
you
well
know,
go for it.
Relational status. So it's time for an overhaul, a makeover, a double.
Yeah,
down.
Hey, do a little research.
You know what I mean?
See which direction you want
to
go.
And don't
get
me on one of those. Take
can you get me on one of those makeover shows?
Yeah. Just explore a little bit, yeah. you know.
Emo makeover.
Going to Nordstrom.
I have five gay guys work on me, and I'm going to look so awesome.
Okay, it's a show, though, but it's like it'll be a makeover show, and you got to get Nate from Amberlin to make
Nate
it over.
And Christian.
He's a fashion, like,
Nate
who are the fashion people you
yeah.
know?
Josh, right. J-Man, our Josh.
Yeah, J-Man, Nate Young.
I get Josh, Christian, Nate Young, maybe. I don't know who else. Yeah, I don't know, but that could actually be cool. We should do a make Toby makeover
consultant. Just, you need some good ones.
That would be a good episode. Like we could film it. So keep that in mind. That's pretty. My kids is really funny. They were talking. They were talking to me, and they were like, they were asking me about our divorce and stuff like that. And then they were saying, "Are you was I going to date? And I was like, we're not thinking about that right now. That's not what we're trying to do. Don't worry. And I said, you don't have to worry about that at all. I said, if that were to ever happen, that'd be down the road. And if it did, it had to be like a super special person that y'all met and y'all really liked and all this stuff. And I said, and then, and I think it was June. She's super funny. And she was like, well, but she said, but if it was a dude, that might be kind of cool. So I'd be okay if it was a guy. And I was like, oh, I said, like, so if I just have Kevin over here, she's like, yeah, what if Kevin, you know, you and Kevin, that might actually be pretty cool. I was like, well, maybe, who knows? You know what I mean? So maybe I was like, I could just, you know, it didn't work out with, it didn't work out on this side. So maybe the other side might be a little bit nicer. So, well, you know, we'll have to see, but, all right. Asking you shall receive. All right, this first one isn't heavy, but this was for you guys more, because this, and maybe even Matt the most. You guys, this comes from Sam P. You guys mentioned Legends of the Fall as one of your favorite quotable movies. So I just watched it last night, and my question is, what the fuck are you guys quoting? It was the weirdest movie I've seen in a long time, and not in a completely negative way. In a 90s drama way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the question.
Okay.
Like, I think he's just thinking, like, why would you like it so much? Because it is probably more, too, when you... I watched it not that long ago. I think it was on TV or something. I was like, oh, this is cool. And, maybe... I think it's on Netflix, actually, Matt, for you, in case you're wondering.
Oh, it is?
But I think it's on Netflix. It's on one of those streaming ones that we got. Maybe it's HBO Max. But it is... 90s, or you know what I mean? Like, it's if it was made today, the acting would be a little different and everything. You know what I mean? It is that epic 90s, like,
it's got a little bit of the, it's a little romanticized, a little drama music.
Yeah, it was at the height of romantic 90s stuff.
Yeah.
But the story is from a novel that's older than that, and then it was put into a movie. So if they made it now, they would just make it a different way, probably. Yeah. But the story is still the story from a novel.
Yeah.
It's not super quotable. He's right. It's not super quotable. But
we quoted it a lot ourselves,
because we recognized
it a bunch of times. But one of the reasons that one way to think about that movie to me is almost any movie, this is how things affect me, is that anything that is extremely emotional, it will, you know, when you first see it, the first time you see it, it just affects you, or you feel the feelings or something like that. And the more you see it, it just starts to be funny. So it doesn't take a few listens and watches through where things that the first time they made you feel a certain way. And then you just find it funny the more times you watch that, because they're just impactful. They cause a reaction. It makes you laugh. And then you say, you want, but the one where Brad Pitt says that he, you know, when he says, once, I'll forgive you once, you know, say that again, we're not brothers. Like, that scene is so, it's just so funny to say it once you have a grip on what the action is in it.
That, and after Anthony Hopkins,
screw the government.
And then the Indian, Native American.
One stab.
Yeah. One stab. He was, and he's the narrator,
right? One stab, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
When Tristan dies, he says, it was a good death. You know, because the bear kills Tristan or whatever. It's good.
It's got some cheesiness to it in that 90s feel.
It sucks that it just hit me
in the right spot.
Those movies, like, I don't understand some things that were happening that were cool in the 80s and 90s, and it feels like it went away. And I do not understand it. Men would go see those movies. You know what I mean? Like, you would go see a movie that was a drama and emotional. And you know, I remember watching A River Runs Through It with Brad Pitt, by the way. And similar in the vibe a little bit. But there were movies that you would go see that were dramas that were awesome. And they just don't happen anymore. Everybody just went, no, we can only have superheroes or robots.
Ultra dark, ultra reality, anti-hero.
But it used to be like just a story, and it was good, and you liked it, and it was
like a novel.
Yeah.
It's more like that feel.
And the same way, I feel like with just like rocker female bands. Like, I just listened to Fly on the Wall with David Spade and Dana Carvey, and they had Sheryl Crow on it, and I was like, man, just a badass lady writing just kick-ass songs. I mean, she has so many hit songs. It's amazing. They were just listening. I was like, oh, I forgot about that. I forgot about it. And I was like, man, what? Like, what happened to just drama movies?
Who's the modern Sheryl Crow is the question.
I mean, I guess, I mean, maybe it'd be, I don't know.
It's more pop than rock. I mean, it's just there's no rock.
Right.
There's no mainstream rock, right?
No.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Taylor Swift, maybe, but that's what I'm saying. Her songs don't seem badass like that.
It's not really mainstream rock, hardly.
What is considered rock now? Is it Imagine Dragons?
Probably.
Yes. Yeah, but that's rock like in general.
Hip-hop, pop.
That's just
rock.
Pop.
But, I mean, you remember listening to Alanis Morissette. I got her album. I was like, this is fucking cool.
She sold 30 million. That's all.
You know what I mean? There was a time where I was like, whoa, man, girl bands are like really awesome and legit. And this is real rock and roll. And then
Cranberries.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. All right. We'll move on to the next one. I can't remember if I read this or not. This is the only one on here where I can't remember. So, but it kind of applies, I think. Anyway, I think a lot of people have or are going through this. So I'm going to read it again. If it's repetitive, we'll still give you a good answer. And maybe y'all will remember. My mom is very conservative Christian and is very concerned about my deconstruction. Y'all remember me reading that one?
No.
I'm not sure I'm a believer anymore, but I don't mind going to church when I visit my mom where she lives or having conversations about God or Jesus. But those conversations usually tend to get her emotional. How do you deal with a parent that is frightened you are on the road to hell?
Well, if you think about it from a parental point of view, like at least as a, in some sense, if you think your mom really thinks that, that would be bad for her. That is pretty. I can see why that's so bad.
For
if
her.
You thought that about your kid, like right. as a parent, I can see that. So she must really that makes her probably a real believer. That's kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she must believe that is true.
So you're saying you should just become a Christian?
I think you should try to go to heaven, is what will be my first recommendation. Just try also worry. You know, yeah. What if she's right?
Actually, she's right.
Come back.
Matt's going through this weird time where he's starting to believe in hell again. And is he wrong? And don't listen to him.
Because like, what if she's right and all, you know, it's like, you can't be.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think there's a respectable way to deal with circumstances like this is I think you can hint at the truth of how you really feel. You know,
yeah.
I think you can, but also there's no need to really drag it out. There's no need to have a big debate about it with them. It's just not, I just don't think it's productive.
Yeah.
To your relationship. And I'm not saying that you have to be uncomfortable so your parent can be comfortable, but also I don't think there's a real need to just shove it in their face. I think there's a casual way to kind of massage that conversation, you know, say, you know, you're just trying to find what's real, you know. I mean, I could see how you could slowly kind of get to that point to where right. it wouldn't seem so crazy.
There really two main branches of that conflict? One is where the parents simply disapprove of the lifestyle, and then you feel that moralism and that control, and they just want you to do what they want you to do to make them feel mm-hmm. better, which is that one I struggle with. That one, you can boundary that one. You just got to do what they call what's known as boundaries or something and just go, this is, you know, that one. Yeah. But then there's the one where that's more of a genuine concern and emotional, which is slightly different. That one's just mm-hmm. That's slightly different. If it's not coming from, like, I don't know, you know, and then in that case, you probably have a better chance of actually having a conversation about your spirituality. Is that not a possibility? In the second branch,
yeah,
or they're is she totally closed? Because if she's totally closed to how you're viewing things now, then what can you do other than be closed? You know, but if she's if she wants you to be open, can she be open? Can you have conversations? You know, maybe not.
Right. I think y'all were saying it. You can acknowledge that. Hey, I understand this is scary for you. You know what I mean? Like, you are a believer and you do believe this strongly. And you don't have to take a hard stance. You can say, maybe I don't know where I'm at, or where I'm at isn't where you are at. And I can understand that's scary. But also, I'm willing to listen and talk to you. And if God is real and the God that you believe in is real, he will change me. You know what I mean? I will be changed and it'll be okay. Right. Anyway, so hope that helps a little bit. All right, here we go. Let's see. Sorry. All right. I wish we'd read this one a while ago. This is Sarah. About a year ago, I was promoted to the head manager of a retail store. I have been with the company for almost 10 years and worked my way up from the bottom position of cashier. At the moment, I could use some advice dealing with my assistant manager. So she's a head manager now, and the assistant manager she's having an issue with. Everything was going great at first, but it feels like the honeymoon period is over. I feel like he keeps overstepping his boundaries by changing things without asking if it's okay with me, such as scheduling procedures or questioning my knowledge of certain things. If I hear him say, well, that's how we did things at my old location, one more time, I'm going to scream. This is my store, and I lead it the way I see fit, which is with kindness and fairness. I know I need to put my foot down, but don't want to seem power hungry. I don't want to seem power hungry. I am, of course, incredibly grateful for his help, but he also is trying to take over things I never asked him to help with. I think it's also worth mentioning I'm a woman in my early 30s, so it's already hard to be taken seriously sometimes. Maybe I'm letting imposter syndrome get the best of me and taking things too personally. Maybe I'm afraid of not being needed, or maybe I'm just afraid of change. I just worked so hard to get to this position, and I'm very proud of myself for overcoming many hard situations and to accomplish all of that I have. Somehow, I still feel like I'm not in charge of the store sometimes, despite my assistant manager insisting he doesn't want the responsibility of being the head manager. I just want to say, back the fuck off professionally, of course. Thank you for any insight you guys could offer.
Well, that's not our area of expertise as the regular job world, you know. That's where we have as little experience as there might be there in whatever way. But at least that's a pretty introspective person. She gave three different things it could be that maybe aren't just, he's fucked up. So that's, you know, first question in my head is, I wonder if he has any doubt about also, or if he's just doing a thing that was never going to stop. Like that's what, like, if somebody's toxic, now I'm not saying he is toxic or whatever, but I'm saying, maybe similar to the last question, if there's somebody who is not going to change their pattern, can't change their pattern, won't change their pattern, and their pattern is negative or negative in the culture it's in, then you had to take the period of time it takes to evaluate that and then figure out how to deal with it. Because there's certain people, you know, where you're dealing with them and you go, oh, no matter how I make adjustments on my end, they're not going to make adjustments.
Right.
But you don't want to necessarily judge that about somebody too early. But if that's true, you can feel that in some situation where this dynamic is not going to change from him. Meanwhile, you're over here going, well, I could do this or I could try this. And I tried that and I've tried this. But what is he trying to, you know, or is it just so that's, hard to judge from the outside. Yeah. But yeah, his old branch. I mean, so it sounds like he's just a set in his whatever ways there, but the one that I hate the most of anything in any kind of setting like that is the do you ever get the one where people say, well, the thing to try to carry weight in an argument is I was told, but just I was told. That's that drives me the craziest ever. Somebody go, I was told, but like I don't know about who's told what or who told. It doesn't, the I was told doesn't hold any, like those empty phrases that people use to push with power, that to me is always like that's what it kind of rhymes with. That, well, my old branch, what does that have to do with anything, you know? If it was a legitimate suggestion, it would be you know, we have a problem we're trying to solve, and he might make a suggestion, well, you know, at my old branch we did this, what do you think about that? That would be appropriate.
Yeah,
but to say a blanket phrase as if that's just going to push something through or excuse something, yeah, that probably is driving you crazy for a reason.
Yeah. I think the guy is, I think he's an asshole and you should definitely put your foot down in some ways. Like, I think you're right. He probably feels a little insecure too, or, it, you know, he says he doesn't want your job or whatever, but I mean, he's assistant manager and why would he not want to be manager? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Like, since we don't know him, maybe he's just super happy being assistant manager. But when people overstep their boundaries, they are doing something against what they know you want. Like, but doing things without asking you or running it by you first. And so if I was in your shoes, I would do a few different things. Like, I'd set up a few different things and see if he follows along, gets in line, or he pushes back on a few different things that you're trying to do. And if he pushes back on it, then you have to have the conversation. Hey, are you with me or not? Like, I am the manager here, and this is the way I'm going to do things. And I need you to be with me and support that. You're my assistant manager to support the manager. That's what's got to happen. Yeah. And that might be a tough conversation, but I think he's overstepping his bounds. And you're right. You worked really hard to get there, went through a lot. And so if there's somebody doing something that you don't like, then it's somebody doing something you don't like. That is true. And you don't have to be mean or hateful, but, you know, I think you do got to stand your ground on a few things because people will walk right over you.
You can think about it too. Like, if you
would go as far as you let him go.
That's what I'm saying. If you detect that that's a one-way force that's not interactive, do you have a two-way with him or is it a one-way with him? Yeah. But you can think of that like a kid or something too. You are in a position to give him choices and frame things as, well, here's the choices. It's this or this. You can also use phrases like, tell him, I'm going to need this. Like, that's a requirement that I'm going to need this. I'm going to need it to be this way, or I'm feeling this way. And also, when it comes to conflict, you can say, I'm not willing to X, Y, Z. And that's a neutral thing you can always say that's also firm. I'm not willing to change this thing. And then you can stop. And then he has to even aggressively challenge something you're saying that's firm and neutral, or he has to accept what you're saying you're not willing. So you have to be clear with that before you have to say, are you with me? I mean, there's some choice framing you could do similar to if you were working with a child or something first. And, you know, he should reveal himself.
I would also set
positions to where he'll reveal himself.
I would also hire a private investigator and get some dirt on him. And then when he does something, I'd say, oh, look, look at this.
Go ahead and get
this document.
Gotta have a plan B.
This document was delivered to my desk today, Todd. check out this document, Todd. And it's just pictures of him like cheating on his wife or doing something bad. And then you're like, say it again. Do something else. That's what
you don't have to use it. Yeah, but you might want to start with that.
Yeah. I would hire a private PI.
It's called leverage. I mean, if you're already at the manager level, you're in the ball game now. You got to be getting leverage on people.
All right, this one's long. This next one is long, Jeremy. Morning, y'all. I'm in need of some advice. Sorry in advance for the lengthy email. Here we go. I got your beverage?
I think so.
I'm 33 years old and in my final year of medical school. I'm applying for residency right now, and we'll find out where I'm headed in March of 2023. I have to apply all over the country as residency is very competitive, and whatever spot accepts me, if I get a spot, I have to go to, as it is contractual agreement. It isn't a contractual agreement. My issue is the fact that I am currently in a long-distance relationship with an amazing woman who is also in an application process for PA school. Currently, we live about 500 miles apart, so it's not too difficult to see each other at least once every 4 to 6 weeks or so. However, our plan was to end up in the same city ideally, but we both have to apply broadly, and the potential for ending up even further apart is a very real possibility and for much longer than either of us were planning. Here's the rub. We had the conversation about this possibility the night we decided to start dating. So it's not like this is coming out of the blue. However, she has also commented here and there about how she's impatient about future plans, marriage, kids, how she's worried about milestones will be delayed. For reference, she's 25. So I'm familiar with the delayed milestones thing since I was 30 when I started medical school. The problem now is that the residency spot that would take me closer to her is very competitive. There's only about 2 spots a year for 8 applicants. The likelihood of me snagging the spot is low, but still technically possible, I suppose. So I've been dealing with some intense anxiety for the last couple of months, and I've come to realize the likelihood of us being in the same city for once is basically nil. It's gotten to the point that my scumbag brain has started to make me feel apathetic about our relationship, as I believe it will fizzle out due to the prolonged time away, at best 4 years apart, potentially more. In addition to the apathy, I started to make up fake scenarios in my head that have started keeping me up at night. An accidental pregnancy, not getting a residency spot at all. I now get so much anxiety that whenever I see a push notification on my phone, my heart skips a beat. So it comes to this. Do I double down on the commitment to the relationship, try the challenge of at least 4 more years of a long distance, potentially thousands of miles away, or do I do the crappy thing and think about ending things? Long-time listener. There's one little PS thing. PS. Also, the head manager at my job's a real dumbass. I'm the assistant manager, and she thinks she knows everything, but I know better than her. Well, thanks, guys. Long-time listener.
Well, first of all, I would suggest it's still not too late to change school and careers. There is my friend Toby starting a college soon. You could just forget.
Let me offer you a tuition.
Yeah, you can apply for a scholarship. You can get in the new turning point, new leaf college that my friend Toby started, where you just you can get out of whatever shit you got going on.
You can still be a doctor.
You can go learn how to be a doctor on cars. You can doctor a transmission and with a bunch of other transmission doctors at Turning Point University.
Turning Point U.
It's only like 6-month program.
TPU.
TPU.
Well, here's what I would say. Now, how old is Jeremy? He didn't say how old
he said 30, and she's 25.
Yeah, I think he's in his 30s. Yeah, he's 33 years old. Final year of medical school.
What I would say is if he doesn't know, then he already knows.
It seems to already know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You might already
know. I'm not saying that's an easy choice. I'm not saying, I mean, that residency is a big deal. I'm not saying you can't do that or whatever, but if you know,
just patterns that are here are not likely to change in 4 or 20 years. And the pattern is that you probably will continue is the one where when you see a notification from them, you go, oh shit.
Yeah.
That one is probably the one that will continue, is my guess.
Yeah. Right.
So you could, whatever that means to you, it means to you, but that's probably the relational dynamic.
I mean, it sucks because I know you really probably like this person a lot, and I don't know how far along you are in your relationship, but you probably see some potential. So it sucks to let that go. I mean, I get that because you think, well, this could be something. This could be it.
You've already invested in it, but so I'm just saying,
it sucks.
The quality of the thing you've invested in is the way that it is now.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is, you're not, the way that it is now is the thing that you're not entirely happy with, is what it seems like.
Long distance relationships.
And then there's all the possibilities of the future. Yeah. Maybe one day it'll be great. But right now is the thing that you're not in love with the situation right now. So what is the maybe that it would be way different?
And long distance relationships are hard. I was in a close distance relationship and it did not work out. The close distance relationships are hard. They don't work out. But long distance relationships are weird because when you eventually get together, then you're together all the time. There is some romantic, oh, we're so far apart, but we go see each other just for the weekend. And you can just do everything in that weekend. Then you get a break from each other. You know what I mean? Like some of that is actually, adds to the romantic desire and want, need of each other and stuff. So it's really tough, but it sounds like to me, both of y'all are going to be extremely busy for the next several years. And I think, 4 or more years of long distance relationship, it could work. And maybe you will get, a residency close. But I think it sounds like y'all are right. Like on some level, you kind of know, but it'll just be hard. And, they say if you let something go, it'll come back to you. I don't see that happening in my life, but it could in yours. You know what I mean? In my life,
a whole lot of divorce jokes. Yeah, I like it.
I know. In my life, you let it go, and then it's like you just let it go.
It's actually gone.
Fast.
You see it floating away.
You just see the smoke from the tire. You don't even see it.
You let the little birdie fly off and instantly eaten by an eagle.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the squirrel that you release back into the wild after you help this injured leg and the cat runs up the tree and kills it. So it sounds like you kind of know this is going to be tough. I think if you wait, and see if you can be close to each other. Maybe you won't be that far away. if you are very far away, yep. you might should just have a real conversation of what is best and what does this mean.
The long distance gives you the ability to be indecisive also,
yeah.
doesn't
yep.
it?
Yeah.
It allows yeah. for a soft, what seems like a soft thing, but there's a real yeah. time. And, you know,
yeah.
you have to figure out what that really means for you.
Yep. All right. I got one more. Okay. Super fun that y'all are offering to let us pick your brain about some things. One big thing I'm working through right now is life is longevity in friendships and relationships and the whole mindset about what is toxic and what is really raising standards for your life. So my question is, what does it look like to identify something that has been toxic or really something that has been raised that has raised your standard in life? You understand that question?
Not entirely.
What does it look like to identify something that has been toxic or something that has raised your standard in life? So I think it's saying, what does it look like to recognize a good friend or potentially a bad friend and the longevity? How do you maintain some longevity in these? Because the toxic ones you should get rid of, but how do you do that? Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I don't know where we get the phrase, can I pick your brain?
Yeah.
But I don't like it.
Yes.
Is that what you want somebody to do to your brain?
It seems like
a lot of people would have said that to you in your life.
They man. Say it all have the time. A lot of people wanting to pick my brain.
I wouldn't mind scratch it. You know, like I mean, I feel like my brain itches a little bit sometimes. Just give me a little scratch, but don't pick.
I mean, I would think I like to talk to people and connect and like share information. There's lots of things I like to do, but having my brain picked, this sounds like some weird medical procedure or something dangerous.
Yeah.
But anyway, I do think I said something about toxic. To me, all things are patterns. So I'm looking for patterns and dynamics. That's just me. But if you, because I think that way naturally, other people are more like they feel this or they feel that, but they seem to get kind of confused with that. But I'm less confused if I have enough data to notice patterns. And to me, everybody has a pattern. And it takes me a while. Some people, I can find their pattern earlier, and sometimes it takes a long time. The more interesting a person is, the more I like them, and the harder it is to figure out their pattern. So sometimes that can waste a lot of time if I can't figure out a person, and then it takes a really long time, and then I finally figure out their pattern, and it's, you know, I don't know if it's good or bad or how it affects me. But anyway, that's why people like me people as projects sometimes. So I can't figure them out yet, so I get over-involved, and sometimes they can turn out to be toxic. So that's a liability for me. But on the other hand, if you can predict somebody by the pattern they have and say, well, if it's this, then it'll be this, and you're looking for the dynamic, what is the relational dynamic and what is their pattern? And then, you know, the toxic ones are the ones where regardless of what you're doing, they do what they do. So you can try different things and notice different things and observe that they're a one-track situation that tends out in the environment that they're in, maybe not every environment. Maybe they're fine at home or fine with their friends or fine. But the thing that you're in, the system you're in, is it positive or negative, net positive or net negative? And if it's a net negative and that's their pattern and it doesn't seem to change and you can start to predict it, you can just label that for yourself and that system to be toxic, and that's not going to work long term because it's more negative than positive. But it's okay that people have some negative patterns. It's like I think of that as alcohol, like a high gravity. Like I like alcohol, but it's poison. 4% for Bud Light, 4.5% poison. That's an okay amount. I can handle that. That's more interesting than sparkling water.
Yeah,
but I don't like, and I can drink an IPA, 7% toxic. I like that. I love it. But those high gravity beers, Bacardi 151, no thanks.
Yeah. Matt's longing for them beers.
I like a little toxicity. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Toxicity, not so bad. A little bit, it's okay. In the whole package, what does it really deliver?
I like a pretty good bit of toxicity, actually.
You can have people have different amounts.
It's funny. I was just talking to my buddy, and we were talking about a friend from college who had a friend that was shitty. And every guy kind of has a friend that's shitty.
Yeah, you like him. You know what I mean? Like that.
There's one friend that nobody understands why you like him or are close to him, but it's spicy. Just, you know, kind of gets you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is something, there's something about them that, yeah, like, just, I don't know if it makes you feel better because they're shitty and you feel better about yourself on a little level, but you kind of do like them too. Like, that, what their energy or vibe is just funny to you or fun, even though, yeah, like, they're just, maybe they're kind of gross or, you know, this guy, the guy we were talking about, he has a friend who everybody just thought was, you know, a little kind of gross sexual, like, always made too harsh of a sexual joke or, you know, just is kind of mean or not nice, but my friend really just liked him. So I'll tell you who it is off air. Y'all yeah, know who it is, but so it's funny, but yeah, there's some level of toxicity that I think is okay as long as you understand who you are in that relationship. If you feel like you're getting lost in it, yeah, you know,
if it's a two-way thing, it's, yeah, you change them, they change you, they're rough around the edges, that's fun, that's life, that's good, that's the good stuff to me. But when it's just they're one way and it's a program and it's, yeah, a pattern, and you know what the pattern is, it doesn't get better.
Yeah.
I mean, they, friends and acquaintances, they give you a feeling.
Yeah.
Like, Matt, you talk about patterns, and I would talk more about the feelings, I guess. Like, if someone said, hey, so-and-so, you know, they're going to hang out tonight, they're going to be around tonight.
Yeah.
You get a feeling from, and it, mm-hmm, probably, mm-hmm, leans a little bit towards positive, a little bit towards negative. Oh, you know, it's either like, oh, nice, or, ah. Oh,
and it depends, I mean, on the situation. Like,
it does.
Like, yeah, the, but, environment is crucial, right, too. If, are they healthy in that environment that you're in or not? And some, yes, sometimes it's yes or no, depends on the situation, type of.
And I'm
situation,
not saying if it's a little, like we were saying, the spiciness is okay, but, you know, I mean,
yeah,
in a similar way, I mean, you know who's kind of bringing you down and who's not. I mean, that's not that hard to decipher.
Yeah, you're
unless
right,
you just, it's really shallow or something. You got to be able to know some of that.
But you know how people label other people as toxic just to, like, when they're the toxic one? Like, that's one of the main things, right, that toxic people, yeah, do is call other people toxic all the time. Like,
yeah.
So, you, I got, mean, you can't, it, don't want to be that.
It really, I mean, this is for sure. I've had people, like, kind of mention or whatever, but, I mean, ours is Lunsford.
Yo, he's a high gravity. People think Lunsford is a double IPA.
But so many, yeah, people think he's like shitty. And why do y'all hang out, yeah, with him? Why do y'all keep hiring him and firing him? And us, you know what I mean? Like, they, like, Lunsford is our friend. Everybody's like, y'all are really that good of friends with him? Like, I mean, people have, like, just were kind of surprised, you know, yeah, that, like, you know, they don't understand like we do. But I love it.
Y'all, but, you know, are y'all kind of anybody's kind of shitty friends?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes,
Matt's
so,
a bunch, probably.
Yeah,
I don't,
yeah,
know if trying, I am.
No, you're, yeah, not.
No, no, not you.
You're like a Michelob, well, I mean, Ultra, maybe, be, at most.
I probably was y'all. Ultra. I was a little bit of y'all.
I can't even get
maybe
a premiere.
Yeah.
What?
I might have been y'all's shitty friend for a while. Maybe still am. I don't know.
I like complicated, rich people with a lot going on, personally. Yeah. I don't like anybody boring at all. And, yeah, you, Devin, you're not boring. You know, you, right, you're definitely an alcoholic beverage. I mean.
Yeah,
don't. Just, I'm not saying you're not, yeah, kombucha or anything.
Right,
I go down smooth. You, yeah, know,
some people like kombucha is all they can handle, yeah, or and some people just still they just like boring people. That's fine.
Am I a light beer or am I a cocktail?
Well, I think
you're a light beer. You kind of think I'm a light beer. Nice for everybody. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people. Just, you know what I mean? Like, I'll take that. You know,
would you consider yourself?
Me.
In the alcoholic beverage,
Toby's just strong.
If I was an alcoholic beverage,
a little strong.
Yeah, I'm a double or a triple whiskey.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like a double shot of whiskey.
And I'm kind of a zany,
splash
but that's
of Diet Coke. You're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, yours got a little bit of Diet Coke in, yeah, it. What is yours, man?
He's like a triple Diet Coke and whiskey. Is what Toby is. That's good. You know what I mean? It's good. Yeah, maybe it's vodka, like, and Diet Dr. Pepper. You know,
it starts off,
like,
strong,
that,
then it gets fun, then it turns a little sad.
Not, yeah.
And then you go, wait, I need another one. For some reason, I'm ordering another one.
But not toxic if you don't have too many of them. For most people, you right, know, I have a high tolerance.
Yeah.
So I like Toby's right up my alley, but I'm probably some kind of zany drink with a tequila in,
like,
it, but maybe with
like
a
Bloody Mary.
Yeah, yeah, something, a Bloody Mary with a bunch of weird stuff in it. Yeah.
That's right. Stalk of celery.
There's a lot of celery and some spice, some weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Shrimp go. On it.
That's it. All right, that's Ask You Shall Receive. All right, we got to pay a couple bills here and tell y'all some things that are going on.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Having a Christmas show, guys, at King's.
I heard.
A Christmas event.
Christmas event at their brewery, right? It's in and at the brewery.
At King's Brewery.
Our buddies Tim and Nate, you know, Amber Lynn, Under Oath, you know, we were kind of like the band that they looked up to. And now they're like, please come play at our coffee spot and our beer spot. Yeah. Please, we'll do anything. We're like, okay, we will. So they own King State, and we're partnering with them to host a Christmas Songs and Stories event. This will be a special Songs and Stories because the full band will be there, basically. Josh might be running sound. I don't know what he's going to be doing because his leg doesn't work. His Achilles is in a boot, but we'll all be there. Even though it's a Christmas themed, we'll be playing some memory classics as well and with some Christmas songs. It's going to be a lot of fun. That is December 2nd down in Tampa. Mm-hmm. Tickets are on sale right now at emorymusic.com, and shirts and posters are also available. It's going to be a lot of fun. Get in the Christmas spirit. Start out December strong with an Emory show. You'll probably see some, you'll see some of those Amber Lynn and Under Oath folks there.
Ticket fees are zero, so I'm just saying in advance.
Zero.
There's not ticket fees because what the hell are those things? And where does the money go? And we don't know the answer to that except for when we have a place where we sell tickets, we don't have to charge any ticket fees. It's just the ticket price. And so, that's worth considering, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah.
With some more songs and stories, Devin and I are going to be, we got three songs and stories coming up in November. And this is going to be really awesome. We're doing Nashville, Tennessee on November 18th. We're doing Louisville, Kentucky on November 19th. And Dayton, Ohio, which is going to be a fun one because that's at JT from Hawthorne Heights Coffee Shop. Man, these emo bastards really get into coffee and do coffee shops and beers and stuff. Apparently. I should have done something. I didn't. I like beer and I like coffee and I didn't do anything. So I'm a dumbass. Tickets on sale for that as well at emorymusic.com. Also, you got to order now. We're writing the custom songs. The custom songs are on sale and make the perfect Christmas gift. It's our favorite thing to do because that's the prompt here. That's really true. I've been working on the songs that we've got on order right now. That's why I'm asking you to order them now because we can only do so many, especially before Christmas. This is the perfect gift for your loved one, for yourself. Send us a little bit of information about your life and we will write you a song. You'll have your very own Emory song written about you. And it's just amazing. So go to emorymusic.com again to order that.
Yep.
As always, Marriage Supply, 10% off with code all over. We got some new products. I'm going to be putting those up in the next few days. Marriage Supply is going well. That goes along with Sex 101 Pod with Dr. Stormy. That podcast is great. And go to Marriage Supply. Try a couple toys. Try a little something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It ain't got to be a big something. It could be a little something, but maybe you like a big something. We got big somethings. We got little somethings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe, I was thinking about it today. You know what you don't hear? Shouldn't there be like, for women, like they got big pussy energy? You know, they talk about big dick energy.
Yeah.
Well, I think men want women with big pussy energy.
Big? Is that what it is? Big?
Yeah. Big? Yeah. I think that's right. Or maybe you don't want that?
Mega pussy?
Yeah. MPE.
Mega pussy energy?
Gargant.
She's got a lot of MPE.
Wow, man. She knows what she's doing. She's confident.
Well, they got the resting bitch face, right? RBF.
Yeah, they talk about that.
That's a meter. Yeah. We need to start a new meter.
I kind of like resting bitch face. I think it's kind of attractive. There's something about a mean woman.
Yeah.
You know, just a mean ass woman that just kind of gets me a little bit.
Don't put up with your shit.
Yeah, you know, just kind of mean. Also, if you want to support this podcast and you get right after this, you can go listen to part two. We do a whole basically full another episode for just the members of Emeryland. You can find everything on emerymusic.com. You can sign up, but that really helps us. It supports this podcast. It supports Emery. You get the access to a bunch of Emery music. We just put out the, for Emeryland only right now, covers, the EP, covers which EP. Is great. Turned out really awesome. And so you get music, you get to support this podcast, you get extra podcasts, discounts here and there, left and right. It's so awesome. And you even get your name read on the podcast. And this is interesting what they got this week. Devin, y'all have the names pulled up? Could y'all,
oh, I got
y'all,
them.
Y'all read them? This week, yep. It's, I don't know if it's just a coincidence or what, but this week, they everybody sent in their most expensive divorces.
Oh, wow.
Their favorite, oh. most expensive divorces.
Their favorite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like celebrity divorces.
Yeah, exactly divorces. That. So, yeah, if you want to read okay. them off.
All right, Nick Haba.
His is Adele and Simon Konecki. Y'all know they got divorced?
How much was that one?
Yeah, it's pretty expensive. They split in 2019, I think. And Cosmopolitan reports that they have tried to keep it quiet, the terms of the $171 million divorce.
What does that mean? Does that mean that there was 171 net worth to be
together
adjudicated?
I think their combined net worth was $171 million. And so then who gets what of that? And I guess that might even be like alimony, or it's probably property that they own together too, and assets and stuff. But
and what are we figuring the lawyers get on such a divorce?
Oh my God.
20%?
Imagine.
Unreal.
20% or more.
I mean, a lawyer has to be so happy when people get divorced. Yeah. I mean, divorce is like the best thing that ever happened to lawyers, right?
Oh.
I mean, it just seems like yeah. it. All right, who's next?
Samuel Moore.
Of course, y'all know this one. Jeff Bezos and Mackenzie Scott.
Yeah, that one's
you
cool.
You know how much theirs was?
A lot.
So it says, in 2019, the divorce between Amazon founder and his wife of 25 years was finalized, with the mother of four walking away with a whopping $38.3 billion in Amazon Good stock.
Lord.
The payout
didn't seem to leave. She already get divorced again, I think.
Yeah.
Or she did. She got in a relationship and like divorced again or something. I don't know. I thought so.
She got some MPE.
I thought she was doing pretty good. I thought she was spending her money like philanthropically. And
she got some mega pussy energy.
But yeah, she got mega pussy energy. That's insane.
MPE.
Gargantuan pussy energy.
Donald Harvey.
But before we go to Donald Harvey, it was, I think he, let's see, it says the payout didn't seem to leave a significant dent in his net worth, which at last look was more, still over $170 billion. So she got $40 billion and it didn't really make a dent at all or change his life whatsoever.
Mackenzie Scott has filed for divorce from her second husband, Dan Jewett, a little over a year after they tied the knot.
Wow. I didn't even think she'd been separated from Jeff Bezos that long. Man, good God.
She's trying to get that money, build up that money.
Yeah. This one's Sylvester Stallone and Jennifer Flavin. This one doesn't seem that crazy. They were married for 25 years. And some people said, I'm about to sneeze, but it's not coming. I forget. It was something like she wanted him to not get a tattoo or a dog or something. And he's like, I'm done. But I know it's more than that. But it says all she's seeking is the $35 million Florida home, but that he's worth $400 million. Isn't that crazy? They've been married for 25 years. And Sylvester Stallone is worth $400 million.
Wow.
The former model, his wife, ex-wife now, she wants complete ownership of their $35 million home. So I don't know, but I bet she would get more than that. $35 million doesn't seem that much.
Sounds like he's getting a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it seems like she would get at least $100 million.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's probably hard to pay if you had the home, how much is the monthly lawn care?
I know. That's what I'm saying. So it must be
the cleaning bill. Think
probably
of that.
Something more to that one. All right, who's next?
This is a tough name. I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
Aristides?
Yeah.
Aristides.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Karas. Aristides Karas.
Can you say it in your low, sick voice?
Could be wrong. Aristides Karas.
There we go. Dr. Dre and his wife, ex-wife, Nicole Young. In 2021, the rapper finalized a $100 million divorce from his wife of 24 years. That 20-year thing, man, it's crazy. The Beats by Dre founder, and they separated was ordered to pay her two separate $50 million transactions. Man, I wonder if he PayPal'd her that. How do you do $50 million? How do you send somebody $50
million? Cash App.
How do you actually do it from your bank? You don't send them a $50 million check, do you?
Cash check. Money order.
It has to be like a wire,
yeah.
I think.
It must be.
Or something. I mean, what it can't be anything else, yeah. Right?
That's what's good about Bitcoin.
That's true.
Man. All right. Do another one?
Last one. Isaac Ferretes.
Oh, Kanye and Kim Kardashian. That's a big one.
Oh.
They had a combined net worth of $2.1 billion in their assets. And says West, his wealth is estimated at $1.3 billion, and hers was $780 million. Together, they shared a combined $70 million in joint assets. And so they had to split that. I don't know how that ended up working out. They probably split. Didn't seem like they took each other's money much, but he's saying all kinds of wild stuff, racist stuff. Well. He's lost a lot of endorsements, especially with Adidas and stuff. And he was a billionaire, and now he's not. From the stuff he said, he is not a billionaire anymore.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
You know, he's smart, though, in some way. So he seems to. I mean, people like say he's crazy. Okay, yeah. Maybe. But I don't think that's the best way to look at it. I think that he is, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, if you listen to I listened to the Lex Fridman episode of him. It's crazy. I mean, it is crazy. But people like that can make more money later.
Yeah.
And they probably can make more money later doing a comeback.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there's some way that there's a pattern of celebrities who know how to go down and come back with some slingshot effect that makes them better off in the long run, more risk, more reward.
Right.
And it's hard to, you know, he seems to be pushing that limit more than other people really ever do, but he probably isn't. He probably, it's like he's trying as hard as he's obviously trying as hard as he can to push the limits of how much you can get canceled to then be cancel proof in a larger sense somehow you can't discount that as a possibility that he is very aggressive, very high risk, but also rational and knows what he's doing in some ways. But I always think that about, I tend to think that about people, that there is a pattern of rationality in his behavior more than pure erratic. I don't see it that way. Yeah.
But what is he actually trying to say? Every time I see a clip or hear an interview, I'm like,
he's saying what is he really saying? Anti-Semitic stuff for sure.
He's definitely doing that on purpose.
Right.
Though, yeah. For whatever reason, he's doing it, not just randomly.
But what's he saying though? What's his motive here? What's he saying?
His motive is not clear, but he's using that because it's like Donald Trump or somebody else where it's divisive, and it's polarizing in a way that you can then use. Because you go, well, it's this, but it's also this. It was like, well, that, you know, it's divisive in just a certain way that can be useful. He walks a line that is walking a line that seems really crazy. So he's pushing it way crazier than anybody else, but he's doing it in a consistent type of way. That's hard. Yeah. So there's whatever rationality he has, I believe that he has it. So it's just like politicians do that. So there's some element of calculation that is embedded in it. And will it work or not work? I don't know. I don't know what the long-term plan is. But he is kind of a master of leaning into his unique type of crazy, maybe.
It's funny. I saw a video. It was like a comedy sketch, and it was just like two older Christian guys talking, and one of the guys goes, you know what, I really like Kanye. And the other guy's like, the other guy was younger. He's like, really? Wow. What album do you like? He says, oh, he does music.
Yeah. Well, no, but this, he says he's the richest black man of all time. He says he's the richest artist of all time. And he's just musician, whatever. He's the richest fashion designer of all time.
Yeah.
That's his point of view. Like, that's the way he sees himself and projects himself. You know what I mean? He said he can do it in any industry because he's that genius. So he's like, you know, being inconsistent in ways you can't figure out what he's doing helps him paint the picture of himself as a genius, which he believes about himself.
Yeah.
And has, you know, he has more money than the Armani or whoever the top fashion designers are. Like, he, you know, that's how he is trying to project it. And he always is, he's always trying to change the subject when he says something about Jewish people and to something to talk about. He uses that as a way to say there's the Black Holocaust and abortion and like 50 million black people are aborted. So that's something he's doing.
Yeah.
That's the way he's using it.
Right.
And I mean, I guess he could say whatever he wants and he'll still be rich beyond anybody's dreams. Like, billionaires, I guess, really can almost do anything. Right. I mean, they can't like kill somebody and not go to jail, but I mean,
they can.
People, you know, I mean, they can. Yeah. I mean,
if that's what they wanted to do, they
whatever they want to do, they can. I wonder how many billionaires are on Earth. Do y'all know the question? It's probably more now than there used to be.
Yeah.
Let me look that up.
Oh, definitely. No, it feels pretty common nowadays. I mean, in a sense of in that class.
I mean, you think in our life we'll have a trillionaire?
Oh, yeah. And think of all the people.
Guess how many billionaires there are. What's your guess?
Billionaires on Earth?
In the world. Yeah.
In the world.
I mean, more
than that. I'll give you one hint. They represent 11.8 trillion in wealth.
11.8.
So this many people control 11.
It's hard to say with other countries. You just don't know that much.
I'm going to say 72.
Okay. More than that. I think it's.
You think it's more than that?
I think it's probably 10 times that. Yeah.
You think it's 720?
It's hundreds.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I think it's 3,300. Yeah, thousands.
3,311 billionaires.
3,000?
Yeah.
I mean, think about all the just NFL, NBA. You know, just NHL, baseball.
Yeah, billionaires.
Not many of them.
A lot of them are billionaires.
There, but some. But think about it this way. This is the one to watch. Now, I've got Kanye watch. There's Rogan watch. There's Musk watch. And I'm telling you, Beast watch. Mr. Beast is seeking a valuation of $1.5 billion, and he's just a YouTuber. And he's just a kid who runs his stuff very simply without megacorps. Without public stock trading, without anything. He just has a very simple organization that he runs. And that is the most intense thing to me, is how powerful that is and how complete. He happens to only be doing like selling burgers and chocolate bars and doing goofy YouTube videos. Right. But he is able to do anything he wants and has nobody controlling him. And he's obviously been able to assemble an incredible team that he can fully manage to achieve any of his goals and has become a billionaire. So he's both already smart enough to figure out how to do anything he wants and has unlimited resources.
Yeah.
So whatever he chooses to, and he's going to live a long time. So what might he choose to do, and how powerful might he become?
He got offered $1 billion for his channel, and he turned it down.
Right. I know, because he knows what he is doing.
He knows he's
and he's not controlled by anybody. He doesn't get his money from the NFL. No. He doesn't get his money from a corporation. He doesn't have stockholders. Nothing. He has complete power, complete autonomy, a complete brain, a team of trusted geniuses, and he has $1 billion. He can do what can he not achieve? With the remaining 60 or more years of his life.
Yeah.
You got to watch that
organization.
And who, like, influencing that organization? Like, who's in his ear?
I'm scared he's the most evil person on Earth. Like, because he comes across as just, you know, Jimmy.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, he has the capability to do more than Elon.
Yeah, I know. He might.
But like, he can influence the world. He's the most potential to impact the world of anybody on Earth, is my point of view. He just hasn't.
Can you imagine
tried
how lucky
at all
we were,
yet.
We were watching Mr. Beast today with my kids, and I was like, his friends are the luckiest friends in the history of the world.
Oh man.
Like, they just grew up with him and he knows them and he feels comfortable with them. And then they just get, but they're not really that funny. Or like, when I'm watching, I'm like, how is this? But it works. I don't understand. They get it. I don't.
Oh, they get it all. They know what everything. I mean?
Yeah.
But I couldn't do that. I actually couldn't do that day in and day out. His life doesn't actually sound that fun to me. But for him to be able to do it, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's crazy. Like one of the videos we watched today was he stayed at the cheapest hotel in the world and the most expensive hotel all the way through. So it was like the first one was like in Indy or something. It was just a mat in a hallway, and it was $1 a night. And then the next one was like, you know, $2,000. Then it was like 10, then it was 50, and then it was 100, and then it was 500, and then it was $1 million. And it was like this mansion that you stay in that you can just do whatever on, you know, like, I mean, it was insane. I was like, wow. And he just did all that. And he just films the whole thing, spends all this money. And then the next one we watched was it made a guy stay in a circle for 100 days. And if the guy did it, he gets $500,000. The guy did it, and everybody's cheering for him and stuff. And you know, I was like, man, it's interesting. You're right. Like, he has a team that comes up with ideas that works well for like families. I think
it's no really drama, family, no yeah. industry, no nothing. It's helpful. No nothing.
People get cars. People get money. Oh, you know, he always is like, oh, just go ahead and take the $10,000 or something. You know, like he never goes, don't give away money or spend it. And that makes him.
And he can generate resources unlimited with his brain and his team and their brains. He has them aligned and arranged in such a way that he can generate unlimited resources. And the only thing he's tried to do is say, I want to be the best at understanding the YouTube algorithm so far in his life. That's all. And then that's all so far. But when nobody even is under the radar, nobody's even thinking. I mean, you know, but who influences him? Who gets in his ear? What he comes to want? That's scary to me.
Yeah, it is. All right, we're going to head over to part two. Lunsford's going to join us. So you better join Emery Land. Go to emerymusic.com. Join it right now. And this has been fun, guys.
Yep.
Honestly, this has been a lot of fun.
It really has. It really has.
I'm not.
I'll see you in a minute.
I mean, I don't even have a percent. My percentage of being a billionaire would be so funny. I'd like to see what, you know, my net worth compared to, you know, Jeff Bezos or something like that would be what, like 0.00000000.
Well, just do it even. Say he's got 100 billion and you have, let's just say, 100,000 net worth. Then you can just do the zeros and figure that out. But you have 6 zeros and he has, what does he have? 3, 6, 9 zeros.
Wow.
So it's, you know, that's the 0.0 whatever. Something like that. Pretty easy math.
All right, see you on part two.